Excellent. We're holding on Chof Zayin Omud Beis by the beginning of the Gemara, just after the Mishnah. The Mishnah had t mentioned to us, so we know that relatives are possible to give eders or to judge, unless we learned earlier in the parak, the person could voluntarily accept them on himself as a could voluntarily accept them as a dayan or an aid. Anyway, so we gave the Mishnah had given a list of relatives. Then Rabbi Yossi had pointed out that this long list over there of about 10 relatives plus each one's son and their son-in-law. So Rabbi Yossi had said that's actually according to Rabbi Akiva. Mishnah Rishona was a smaller list. Dodo ben Dodo, v'chol aroi liyoshei. His uncle, his cousin, and anybody else who's in line to yashin him more or less directly. Rishonim actually argue whether those words v'chol aroi liyoshei are also part of the Mishnah Rishona or not. In any case, the Mishnah had established the basic point that relatives are possible to give eders. So a big nafkamina that we have nowadays is, of course, every time there's a chuppah, they have to make sure that the various edim that you're going to have over there, the edim kiddushin, the edim on the ksuba, and so forth, are not relatives of any of the degrees mentioned here in the Mishnah or in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Minohani mili. Where do we know this from in the first place, that relatives can't say eders for one another? And what we mean is, for or against. So the Tana Rabbanon, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, Lo yumsu oves abonim, when the Pasuk says, fathers should not be executed, should not be killed because of their sons. Ma tamad loima, what does that come to teach us? Im lalamach lo yumsu oves ba'avon bonim, or bonim ba'avon oves, does it mean exactly what it sounds like, that parents shouldn't be punished for their children's averus and vice versa? Or maybe the Beis Din, for example, wouldn't execute one because of the other. The fact is, the pasuk continues. It says each one will be executed for his own avera. So we don't need the words lo yumsu avos habonim or bonim lo yumsu al avosam to teach us that concept. Now, which isn't to say that you don't have the pshat as well. In fact, the pasuk in Sefer Melachim mentions that one of the kings of Yehuda, Amatzia, his father Yoyash was assassinated by a couple of people. Afterwards, it says when Amatzia became the king, he punished the assassins themselves, but not their children. And it quotes this pasuk. So the question, the pasuk does have its pasha to pshat, but in terms of halacha, there's more to it than that. Ella, what it means is lo yumsu oves habonim means be'edus bonim. When it says fathers should not be killed because of the children, means because of the edus of the children. So that doesn't just mean their own children. It would also mean, for example, that if you have two fathers, two brothers, and each one of them has children, the children of one wouldn't be able to say eidos regarding the other one, regarding their uncle. So we see from that that an uncle and a nephew are possible to say eidos regarding one another. Ubonim lo yumsu al avos means be eidos avos. So
can you repeat that last time?
what we're saying is the words bonim and avos, we don't just mean the father and son themselves. What we actually mean is the father, two fathers and their respective sons. Avos, meaning two brothers who are both fathers of sons themselves. So now those sons are cousins to one another. So the cousins themselves we're going to deal with later on. But the point is that so far, we see from this pasuk that, for example, Reuven's sons are possible to testify regarding Shimon, and Shimon's sons are possible to testify regarding Reuven. In other words, if it weren't for that, it wouldn't have to call it Ovos, then it could just say Ov and Ben. So the Gemara asks, so bonim ba'avon avos lo, you're telling me children don't sometimes get punished for the averus of their father? V'haksiv, you have a pasuk in the Yud Gomor Midas HaRachmim, poiked avon avos al bonim, that Hashem remembers and Hashem punishes the avera of the father of the fathers on the children. And the answer is b'yadehin. That's talking about specifically where the children continue to grab a hold of and to do what their fathers did. So then, when Hashem eventually punishes the children, then he's going to include the averus of the fathers as well. For one thing, because then the fact that they've been going for generations like that means the avera is much stronger, because it means, in other words, like now it's really embedded into how the family and into how the family is doing things. Kedetanya, as in fact we learn, as in fact we, so yeah. So K'tatanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, when it says va'avonis avosim itam, when it says also at the end of the Teuchacha, it says also with the averus of the fa of their fathers in their hands, they will waste away. They'll waste away in Golos. What does that mean? Va'avonis avosim itam. Itam means with them. That's specifically when they're holding on to their ancestors' averus and continuing to do the same averus. Maybe it means that even if not, maybe it just means that Hashem will punish the children for the averus of their fathers, even when the children are not guilty of those averus. No, we have the other pasuk that we just quoted before. Each person is punished for their own avera. So therefore, therefore, we have to understand in order to reconcile the two pesukim that one's talking about when they're oichs in ma'ase avasein biyadehen and the other not. The Gemara says Veloy. Still, you're telling me that one person is never punished for another one's averus. The pasuk says v'chosh lu'ish ba'achiv. The pasuk says, wait, also in the Teuchach a few pesukim earlier, each person will be stumbling over his brother, over his fellow yid, which means ish ba'avoin achiv. That means a person is going to be stumbling and punished for the avera of his brother, of his fellow yid. Malam shekolon arevim zebazeh. So we see from that all Jews are responsible for one another, and therefore when one person does an avera, then the other person can get punished for it as well. The answer is that's talking about where they had the capability to be moicha, to protest the other person doing the avera, and they didn't, then therefore they got punished for that as well. But otherwise, now when it comes to a father and a son, when the Rifan Ein Yaakov points out, you know, listen, a son is not going to be moicha and his father out of respect. So therefore, we have to understand it's in my saying biyadehen. But other than that, we're saying that. But other than that, we're saying that in addition, there's the point of koyis zolarev mzelazeh. Maharsha discusses over here an interesting side point, by the way, which is this pasuk va'af va'avonis avoytsam itam yimaku. He says the beginning of that pasuk is talking about is talking in second person, va'nisharim b'chem, those who are left of you, etc. And then it continues in second and third person, va'avonis avoytsam itam yimaku, in third person. So he explains basically that up until that point, the Teuchacha is primarily focusing on churban bayis rishon. But then the pasuk is switching gears and starting to talk about churban bayis sheni, where already there was a concealment of Hashem's shechina. There was no nevuah, there was no urim v'tumim, etc. So we're saying that when they have the avera of sinas chinam, and then va'af, and in addition they also have the averas of their ancestors from bayis rishon, then ikam yimaku, then all of that together is hurting them. But the point is, as far as the halacha, we're saying that we learn from the words la yumsu avos abanim, avanim la yumsu al avos, that it means that a nephew can't testify regarding his uncle or vice versa. Okay, the Gemara says ashkachon avos the banim avanim la avos. So fine, then that tells us that again that the fathers can't testify, the father can't testify for the children of his brother. Or vice versa, or the children of the brother can't testify regarding their uncle. Needless to say, obviously, therefore, the two brothers themselves couldn't testify regarding one another. So Reuven couldn't testify about Shimon, or vice versa. Bonim, the Bonim Menolon, where do we know that it also includes the children to the children, the cousins, the first cousins? How do we know that they're also included and they also can't testify? And the answer is imkain. If it didn't mean that lichtiv krolo yumsu avos al ben, then the pasuk could have said fathers shouldn't be killed because of the son in singular. My bonim, what does it mean when it says the sons in plural? Means dafilu bonim lahadodi, even those sons to one another are also possible to say eders. Okay. Ashkachon bonim lahadodi, fine. So that applies then that the sons to each other are possible to give eders. Bonim la'alma menolon. What about, how do we know that the two of them together would be possible to testify regarding somebody else? So suppose, for example, so fine, you're saying that if Reuven and Shimon had children, Chanoich and Yemuel, respectively, to use the names from Parshas Vayigash, then one of them, Chanoich, can't join together with somebody else and testify regarding Yemuel, or the other way around. How do we know that Chanoich and Yemuel themselves, the cousin, cannot go and testify the two of them together regarding somebody else? And the answer is, at that point, that's a svara. K'tanya, as we learn in a braisa, eina edim nasim zomimin ad sheyazumu shnehem. You can't edim zomimin require, in order for them to be considered edim zomimin and get the appropriate penalties for edim zomimin, has to be that both of them became muzam. Meaning, in other words, what's hazama, as we know, is when other edim come and say, imonu hayisim, you were with us at the time when you claim that this event happened. It has to be that the other edim are able to say that about both of them. Well, if you're going to say, for example, that our example of the two cousins, Chanoich and Yemuel, would be able to go and testify regarding somebody else together, then it's going to come out. Suppose that the two of them together testify that Yankel was Mechalel Shabbos. It turns out that they're Edim Zomim, and now they're going to be executed. And it comes out that Chanoich is getting executed partially because of what Yemuel said, because it has to be that the two of them together came and said Eidos, and we can't have that. The whole point is we just established that they're possible to say Eidos regarding one another. So that's the svara, therefore, to say that the two of them together can't be testifying regarding somebody else. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omalei Rava, but Rava says, V'litai Meich, why, according to your Svara, Hoditanan, considering this that we learned in a Mishnah, this was in Bava Basra. Now, we know a person has to have 3 years chazaka on a field or other property or whatever in order to be able to say the definitively that he owns it. And if you ask him where's his shtar, he has every right to say, after 3 years, I didn't bother keeping it. So the Mishnah describes Shloisha Achen. Suppose you have three brothers. Each one has Eidos about 1 year that this guy held onto the field. The Echad Mitzaref Imahen, and then you have one person joining together with all three of them. So, for example, this guy has a field, and now somebody else is coming to be Ma'arer and saying, "Wait, this is my field." So now he wants to bring Eidim to say, "Listen, I had undisputed possession of this field, and I was working in an all for tough." Tufshin Pei Beis Gimel and Dalad. What's my proof? Well, for Tufshin Pei Beis, I have Yankel coming together with a brother Chanoich. For Tufshin Pei Gimel, I have the same Yankel coming together with Chanoich's brother Palu, another son of Reuven. For Tufshin Pei Dalad, I have the same Yankel coming together with Chetzra, and the third son of Reuven. So that works. Harei l'sholosh edius. These are considered three separate edius, and therefore it's not a problem that you have brothers testifying as one edius, because there are three separate edius, one on Tufshin Pei Beis, one on Gimel, one on Dalet. V'hein edius achos l'hazama. However, when it comes to hazama, then it's all considered one edius, meaning, in other words, that if one of those edius gets muzam, then he's not going to get punished. It would require all four of them are muzam in order for there to be punishment. And then what would happen is, this being a matter of dinim mamonis, we would take the value of that field and we would divide it among the four of them, and each one would have to pay. So, what we would say is the Yankel who came with all three of them would be paying half, and each of the three brothers would be paying one third of the remaining half, so one sixth. In any case, so Rava says, nu nimtze eid zomim shalom mamon be'eder sachiv. Nu, don't you have a case there where an eid zomim ends up paying money because of his brother's eders? Because again, if it hadn't been for Chanoich coming and testifying, then Palu wouldn't be on the hook to pay, etc. Ella hazama me'al makasi. You have to answer that hazama is something that comes from elsewhere. It has nothing to do, but in other words, it's not a direct, it's because of the mazimin, it's because of the other edim who come and say, manu hayisim, that requires them to pay. It's not directly because one of them, it's not that one of them is causing the other one to pay. So hochanami hazama me'al makasi. So in your svara also, Rami Bachama, you're telling me that the problem is that now if Chanoich and Palu, for example, were to come and testify together, or Chanoich and Yemuel, their cousin, as we said before, were to come and testify together about Yankel, that he killed somebody, and now if they're Muslim, then they're going to be killed. You're going to say one of them is being killed by the edus of the other. Again, by the same logic that we just said, the hazama, we should discount for that purpose, because it's not directly that he's causing the other one to be killed because of his edus. He's causing the other, that what's causing them to be killed is because of the hazama, which comes from elsewhere. So the Gemara answers, Ella im kein, no. So actually what it is that we are going to learn it from a pasuk after all, not from a svara, not from a svara like Rami Bachama said. El in Cain, if it were so that two brothers or two cousins or whatever are kosher to testify together about somebody else, lichtiv kra al ovois, then the posse that lichtiv kra uvein al ovois. Then again, it would have said bein in the singular on fathers, and then it would then it would be clear that two bonim together are able to testify on somebody else. Inami heim al ovois, or even it could say them on the ovois, because we know the previous part of the pasuk mentioned ovois al bonim. So obviously bonim, so obviously the them would be the bonim who are just mentioned. My uvonim, when instead it repeats the word bonim and says that and the sons can't testify, that means I feel a bonim la'alma. That means even the two sons, which again we said meant the two cousins, the two sons of Reuven and Shimon respectively, are not able to testify la'alma, are not able to testify about somebody else outside their family. So that's where we learn it from. All right, the Gemara says, fine, so that takes care then of people who are related on their father's side, that apostle to say Eidos on each other or together on somebody else. Where do we know that it also includes brother, that it also includes relatives from the mother's side? Now, we had in the Mishnah, we had, for example, his mother's brother. We had Baal Imai, we had his mother's husband, his stepfather, and we had a couple of other examples like that in the Mishnah where the relationship is on the female side. So the answer is Omakra always always trezimni, because the Pasuk mentions father is twice. Lo yumsu over lo yumsu bo always al bonim, uvonim lo yumsu al ovois. So twice it says the word ovois. Im ina since we don't need both of them to tell us about the relatives of the father, then therefore we can reapply one of them to apply to relatives of the mother. That's a, it's one of the middos that we often use in Shas, that when we have two statements in a pasuk, and when and one of them seems to be unnecessary, then we can reuse it. We can instead reapply it to something similar but not identical. So here, that's for here is here here. That's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to say that the ovos means basically it means, in other words, ancestors in the more general sense. So it doesn't just mean. So it doesn't just mean fathers. Then we can say that it includes mothers as well. So therefore, so by the same token, then we would say that it applies to that it applies to relatives on the mother's side.
You have just
We've just won.
exhausted this drasha by saying that you couldn't learn Eidos de Alma because you needed one to say
You need
explicitly
one
bonim
bonim to say you.
instead of aim. So once you have already implied that aim already is written
Yeah.
hiddenly in the pasuk, you couldn't have written aves ve'aim a second time because aim al aim wouldn't
Yeah,
work.
you could. Yeah, you could. You could say
Only
behem
be
al.
diagonal.
Yeah, you could say behem al heim. Well, you so
Aves
obvious al bonim
would
behem
mean
al heim.
once ve'aim al aim.
Yeah, it would mean and then the reverse, exactly that. Yeah. Yeah. So so that that's exactly what we assume it could have said. Yeah. Okay. So fine. Continues the Gemara. So far, then all of that is telling us that they can't testify where it's going to be detrimental to the other one. Because after all, the Pasuk is mentioning La Yumsu, the fathers can't be executed because of the children, meaning because of the Eidos of their respective children, their nephews, and vice versa. And we're saying that now one extra ovos is also coming to teach us the mothers. So all of that is La Yumsu, that they can't be executed because of it. L'schus, where do we know the same concept applies, that they can't testify l'schus, that they can't testify for something favorable to one another? So the answer is Omakro yumsu yumsu tre zimni. Again, because the Pasuk says the word yumsu twice, and the same thing. The same thing. We can darshin that one of them is unnecessary for itself, and therefore it teaches us that they can't testify l'schus either. The Ran actually points out when you get down to it, the Gemara could have answered that the Gemara could have answered that basically it's a Kal v'Chomer. But nevertheless, we often have the Ran points out Milsa de Astia, but Kal v'Chomer Torah Chakos of Lakros. Sometimes you have something which we could have derived with a Kal v'Chomer, and still the Pasuk takes the trouble to mention it. And then also the Ran points out, after all, we still would need it to tell us that the two brothers or two cousins or whatever can't testify for the benefit of somebody else. So for that, you still need the pasuk. Because otherwise, after all, you would think the Torah is always interested, especially in Dinin Nefoshes, the Torah is always interested in trying to find as many as possible, as many grounds as possible to exonerate someone. So you would think maybe the Torah would allow it. Let two brothers or two cousins together come and testify to help prevent somebody from getting Misa, and therefore we need the Limud from the Pasuk to tell us that not. All right, Ashkechon b'dinim nefashis. Fine, that shows us that by dinim, all of this applies by dinim nefashis, where the word yumsu applies. B'dinim mominus menolon, where do we know that all of this applies to dinim mominus as well? And the answer is amakra mishpat echad yelachem. The pasuk says there should be one judgment for you, and we learn from that. We're going to learn a great deal regarding this in the next parak. Mishpat hashav lachem means the judgments have to be equal. Other things being equal, there are going to be, we're going to learn in the next parak, a number of differences between dinim mominus and dinim nefashis, but broadly the things are supposed to be the same between them. So generally speaking, when we find something that applies to dinim nefashis, it'll apply to dinim mominus, or vice versa, unless we have a particular reason to say otherwise, as we'll see some examples in the next parak, Be'ez Hashem. Okay, so thus far the Limudim, so that's where we know. Fine. Now let's get into some actual dinim. Omer Rav, achi abba lo yoidli. My father's brother would not be able to say Eidus for me, because that's uncle and nephew, and we just finished learning that that wouldn't work. And that means not just him, who, he himself, uvnoi, also his son, which would be my first cousin, vachasonoi, and also his son-in-law. So my uncle's son-in-law would also... even though he's the son-in-law is not that directly related to me, he's married to my cousin. Nevertheless, Rav is teaching us that he would be possible to say Eidus regarding me. And then vice versa, I wouldn't be able to say Eidus on him, I or my son or my son-in-law. So the Gemara asks, "Vamai? Now why not?" Why would what Rav himself, we understand, is his uncle's nephew, but why would Rav's son, who is his uncle's great nephew, why would he be possible to say Eidus? Now for the purposes of the next piece of Gemara, we have to realize we're going to start using numbers to represent the various generations. The same way as in English, we talk about, for example, first cousins, second cousins, third cousins, etc., where the number refers to how far back did they have a relative in common. So, for example, first cousins, one generation back, their fathers were brothers. Second cousins mean two generations back, their fathers were brothers, etc. The same way in Gemara terminology, here we're going to use the words Rishon, Sheni, and Shlishi, and so forth, to represent those degrees of relationship of relatedness. Now Rav's father and his uncle would be Rishon B'Rishon, because they're brothers, they're the first generation to each other. Rav himself to his uncle would be what's called Sheni B'Rishon. Rav's son would be to his uncle, to Rav's uncle, would be Shlishi B'Rishon, would be the third generation to the first one. Is that a problem? Vanan Sheni B'Sheni T'nan, Sheni B'Rishon T'nan. Now, our Mishnah had mentioned the second to the second, the first cousins, Sheni B'Rishon T'nan, and the Mishnah had also mentioned the nephews to the uncles, Shlishi B'Rishon Leitnan, but the Mishnah never said anything about the third generation to the first one. In our scenario, Rav's son testifying regarding Rav's uncle, which would mean great nephew for great uncle. So why is Rav saying that it's possible? And the answer is my chassoni de katani bas nissen chassan benoi. The answer is that the Mishnah does refer to it, because the Mishnah mentions your uncle and his son and his son-in-law. It doesn't just mean his direct son-in-law, meaning, in other words, again, your cousin's husband chassan benoi. It means your uncle has a son who is your first cousin, and he in turn has a son-in-law, which is now that would be your that that so that would be your first cousin once removed, and now to be exact, the son has a daughter, and that daughter goes and marries a man. That man would be your his wife is your first cousin once removed. That's a shlishi to sheni. And yes, the Mishnah is saying that, and then and they're possible. So therefore, yes, you see that shlishi to Rishon is also possible. So the Gemara says, well, then why does the Mishnah phrase it that way? V'lisni ben b'noi. Then why does the Mishnah just say straight out his grandson? And the answer is milsa agav orcha k'mash milan debal ke'ishta. Because the Mishnah incidentally wants to point out another din, which is that the husband and wife are the same thing. And since you would be possible to testify regarding your first cousin, namely regarding your first cousin, when he's a man, the same thing. When your first cousin is a woman and she's married to someone you're also possible to testify regarding him. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ela hadatoni Rabchia." Now, what about then? Let's consider all of this in light of what Rabchia teaches in a Braisa. Altogether, Rabchia says, "Shmoina avos shein estrim ba'arba." Altogether, in our Mishnah, we have eight avos, eight primary relatives, where they turn out to be 24, because for each one of them, we said that you have their sons and their sons-in-law. So therefore, you have to multiply the eight by three. Now, based on what we're saying, that also Hassan Benoi, that also his grandson-in-law is also included, then Hani Tlosin Vatarotin Havi, then you're up to 32. Because each one of the relatives mentioned in the Mishnah, you would have to consider also them, their son, their grandson, and their grand, and it would have to include the father, the son-in-law, and the grandson-in-law. Okay, so let's say for example, according to what Rav is telling us, in other words, it comes out his uncle. So he and his uncle are possible to say edus for each other. That's fine. That's sheni berishin. Now we said before that also because of ovos al bonim and bonim al ovos means Rav would be also to testify regarding his cousin or regarding his uncle's son as well. The Mishnah had mentioned that point, his son. The Mishnah had also mentioned his son-in-law, which again means if Rav has a first cousin who's a woman, then and she's married, then he's also to testify regarding that, regarding him as well. Now what we're saying is Rav is adding an additional point, which is you also have Chassan Benoi. So you have Rav's uncle has a son, who in turn has a daughter who gets married. That daughter is Rav's first cousin once removed. She's Shlishi B'sheni to Rav, and we're saying that Rav is possible to testify for her husband or vice versa. So now Rav Chia is telling us for each of the eight relatives mentioned in the Mishnah, you also have their son and their son-in-law. Their son and their son-in-law is also included. Based on what Rav says, you have their son, their son-in-law, and their grandson-in-law. So in that case, then 8 times 4 is going to be 32. So why is Rav Chia mentioning that there's only 24? Rashi, by the way, brings up the point. There is a ninth one mentioned in the Mishnah as well. There is Chorgoi. There is his stepson. But there, the Mishnah had said Chorgoi Levadoi, that there it's only him. It doesn't go down in the generations. A person can't say Adris regarding a stepson, but he could say Adris regarding a stepson's children, for example. So on the face of it, Hani Tlosin Vatarotin Havi. So it comes out to 32, 8 times 4. Tosfos points out the Gemara could have even asked that there were maybe even more. There were 40 because you have them, their sons-in-law, their grandsons-in-law, and their grandsons. But fine, it doesn't say explicitly in the Mishnah. It doesn't mention grandsons. So therefore, and besides which, also Tosfos says shem chasnu schadhu. You could say that fine. The whole concept of relationship by marriage. Fine, we can fold that in altogether. The point is, in other words, we certainly can't say that his son-in-law and his son's son-in-law are the same kind of thing. So therefore, Rav Chiya's Braisa should account for that. So the answer is Ela la'olam chasoni mamish. No. So we're going to answer that Rav is talking about his son-in-law. We are talking about his first cousin by marriage, Rav's female cousin's husband. Why does Rav call him his son's chosen? Because since he comes from a different family, therefore it can be considered as though it was another generation. So in other words, what we're going to say is like this. This son-in-law, we are talking about his uncle's son-in-law. So we are talking about Rav has a woman who's his first cousin, and this first cousin is married to somebody. What we're saying is that person, because he's not a direct blood relation of Rav, therefore we're going to consider for the we're going to consider him as though he was one generation further away. And nevertheless, Rav is saying that he's possible to say Eidos regarding him, which means, in other words, that we would say that Shlishi is possible for Rishon. Or for Shani. So therefore, so we're saying that that son-in-law would in fact be possible to say Eidos regarding Rav himself, or regarding Rav's father or his children or whatever. So I'm gonna ask Hachi. Well, yeah, if you're gonna go like that, Havi Shlishi, then you're saying that it's a third generation regarding a second, because you would say Rav himself is the second generation. This cousin by marriage of Rav, we're saying, would be considered the third generation, because his wife, we're saying, would be the second generation. But you're saying he himself, because he comes from a different family, is going to be considered as though he was one generation further away. So then it's Shlishi against Sheni. But Rav actually Shlishi b'Sheni. We find that Rav says that such a thing is kosher. He's saying that my son can't say Eidos regarding my uncle, which would be that would be Shlishi to Rishon, but implying, in other words, my son would be able to say Eidos regarding my first cousin, which is Shlishi to Sheni. So then we're back to the question then. If we're saying that Rav is passing Shlishi to Rishon, where are we getting that from? So the answer is Ela Rav de Omer Rabbi Lazar. So the answer is Rav is saying like what Rabbi Lazar says. The Tanya Rabbi Lazar Omer Keshem Shachi Abba Lo Yored Li. The same way as my uncle cannot say Eidos for me, Hu Uvnoi V'Chasanai. And as the Mishnah had said, that includes him and his son, which is my first cousin, and his son-in-law, which would be my cousin by marriage, Kach Ben Achi Abba. The same way, my uncle's son, my first cousin, Lo Yored Li, he can't say Eidos for me either. Who? He himself, because he's my first cousin. Uvnoi, also his son, which is my first cousin once removed, which would be Shlishi B'Sheni, or his son-in-law. So we're saying, according to Rabbi Elazar, that Shlishi is possible regarding Sheni. And if he's possible to say Eidos, even regarding Sheni, how much more so regarding Rishon? So that exactly matches what Rav is saying. So the Gemara says that now the Gemara points out the Rav actual Shlishi B'Sheni. Now it is true. So the Gemara asks, "Va'kati haveli Shlishi B'Sheni?" Okay, but then you're saying that Rabbi Lazar is also passing the Shlishi to say Eidos on the Sheni, because you're saying that Rabbi Lazar is saying that also the that also your uncle's son-in-law, which is your first cousin by your cousin's husband, your first cousin's husband, is possible to say Eidos regarding you, which is Shlishi B'Sheni. But Rav is saying that such a thing would be kosher. Shlishi B'Sheni, but Rav actual Shlishi B'Sheni. Rav said it is kosher. The answer is fine. Rav Sava le Kavasei B'Chodo, Pola Galei B'Chodo. Fine. So Rav agrees with Rabbi Lazar about one part of the din, about Shlishi against Rishon, but he disagrees regarding Shlishi about Shlishi against Sheni. So the Gemara says, "My time in the Rav. Why indeed does Rav hold that Shlishi should be possible against Rishon as well?" And the answer is, we're supposed to be, again, the pasuk that we said before, fathers shouldn't be executed because of sons and vice versa. It says, uvonim. So Larabbis Dor Acher, the Vav comes to include another generation. So he says that teaches us Shlishi B'Rishon. So that teaches us, for example, Rav's children to say Eidos regarding Rav's uncle, great nephew to great uncle, wouldn't work, says Rav. Rabbi Lazar answers back, Al Bonim Amar Achmana, the pasuk says, on sons, Psule De'ovis Shodi Abonim, means that whenever the father is apostle, we also have to apply it to their children as well, and therefore that would include even Shlishi against Sheni. So Rav doesn't hold of that point, but which is why he argues with Rabbi Lazar on that point. So Rav would say Shlishi on Rishon is possible. So Rav's son can't testify regarding Rav's uncle. However, Rav would hold that his son could testify regarding his cousin, which would be the Rav's son's first cousin once removed. It would be Rav's cousin for first cousin, so it would be his son's first cousin once removed. And Rabbi Lazar would disagree and say that that's possible as well.
Say that again. Psu
That we take the psul of the avos and we also apply it to the children. So Rabbi Elazar is saying, given that Rav's son would be possible to testify regarding Rav's uncle, that's Shlishi Berishon, then also it means he's possible to testify regarding Rav's uncle's son, which would be a first cousin once removed, which would be Shlishi B'Sheni. Rav argues on that point, on that last point. Tosfos, by the way, deals with the question. So what is the halacha as far as Shlishi Berishon? Tosfos says that there's a relevant Gemara in Bava Basra that says that implies that yes, that Shlishi Berishon is in fact possible. So what Rav is saying over here would be accepted la halacha, that Rav's son would be possible to testify regarding Rav's uncle. On the other hand, the Rif and the Rambam disagree, and they say that no, the halacha is not like Rav and Nath, and they learn that relevant Gemara in Bava Basra differently. So according to them, so and because of because Rava says something in Bava Basra that can be taken that they take to mean that the halacha is that a shlishi would be kosher regarding a rishon. So it's a machlokas rishonim. Ultimately, when the Rama brings it in Choshen Mishpat, he says v'chein roi lahoris. This would be the proper way to decide is that a shlishi is possible to testify regarding a rishon. So again, I mean, the most practical application of this kind of thing nowadays is with Edim by a wedding. So therefore, so be careful and don't allow a shlishi to be Edus on the Rishon or vice versa. Okay, the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Nachman, Achi Chamoisi lo yoidli. Here's more details. The brother of my mother-in-law would not be able to say Eidus for me. Ben achi chamoisi lo yoidli. Neither would the son of my mother-in-law's brother. Ben achois chamoisi lo yoidli, and neither would the son of my mother-in-law's sister. The Tona Tuna, and indeed Or Tana teaches something to that effect. Tuna means Or Tana. So Tona, he taught Tuna Or Tana. So Or Tana has taught something from which we can infer that. Because the Mishnah had said Bala Choisa, the Mishnah had mentioned his sister's husband, Ubala Chois Aviv, and his father's sister's husband, Ubala Chois Imai, and his mother's sister's husband. So his uncles by marriage, in other words, and we said them or their sons or their sons-in-law. So therefore, so now, in other words, if my sister's husband has a son-in-law, what's the problem? The problem is that I'm the brother of his mother-in-law because his sister his mother-in-law is my sister. So we see, in other words, we see all those relationships that Rav Nachman had just delineated are all implied in the mission over there by saying Heinu Vnehen V'chasnehen. Okay. Amar Rav Ashi, Ki Havenan Be'ula, when we were learning in Ula's Yeshiva, Iboilon, we had the following question. Achi Chomiv Mahu, what about would a person be able to say Eidos regarding his father-in-law's brother? Ben achi chomiv mahu. What about his father-in-law's nephew? Or ben achois chomiv mahu, or the son of my father-in-law's daughter. So what would be the din regarding that? Omalon, and Ula answers us again. Tinisua. Well, we have our Mishnah. Ochiv, his brother, vachi oviv, and his father's brother, vachi imay, and his mother's brother, heinu vnein vachasnein, them and their sons and their sons-in-law. And each one is reciprocal. If you're possible to say Eidos regarding them, they're possible to say Eidos regarding you. So therefore, why are you possible to say Eidos for your brother's son-in-law? Because you are his father-in-law's brother. Well, then the same thing over here as far as And the same thing. Your uncle's son-in-law is to you the brother of his father-in-law, etc. So therefore, so yeah, the Mishnah is that once you look at the family trees in our Mishnah and draw them out, then Ula says then you'll have your answer. All right, the Gemara says Rav Ikla Mizban Gvili. Rav one time went to visit a place in order to buy parchment. Based on a different girsa, there's another explanation that Mizban Gvili is the name of a place where Rav had gone to visit. Anyway, Bomine, while he was there, they asked him, Maush Yoid Adam Be'eshes Chorgoy, is a person able to say Eidos regarding the wife of his stepson. So now we said in the Mishnah, a person can't say Eidos regarding his stepson, and vice versa. The Mishnah had mentioned also your father's wife, which would mean your stepfather. So a stepson and a stepfather can't say Eidos regarding one another. What about when it's something involving your stepson's wife? Meaning Rashi says regarding her nichsim alug, where she's arguing about it with somebody from outside the family. Now, Rashi says, when it comes to the wives of other relatives, then we know their children are posel, and he's posel to them, so therefore, so he'd be posel, we said before, Baal Ke Ishtoi, and the fact is, the children could yarshin their mother. But over here, we're talking about where the Mishnah had said that the son of your stepson, you would be kosher to say Eidos about. So therefore, now the question is, does the same thing apply to his wife as well? Well, b'sura amri baal ki ishtoi, in surah they said the husband is like his wife. So the same way as the same way. So yeah, it would be considered as though he's her father-in-law. And a father-in-law is possible to say Eidos for his son-in-law, as we said before. But pupadissa amri isha kabaila, in pupadissa they said it the other way around. The wife is like her husband. Why they say in two different Lashonis, the Rosh explains that actually they, in each case, in Sura versus in Pompadissa, a different case was brought to Beis Din, one involving saying Eidos about something involving the wife, one about one case that was brought regarding saying Eidos regarding the husband, and in each case they said, so they both agree with the actual Din, the husband and wife are considered equals, as far as that kind of thing goes, the question is just which one was the first one that came up. Anyway, so you have a person has a stepson, so he's married and his wife has a son from a previous marriage, which makes him chorgoy, that makes that child his stepson. Now that stepson is married, we're asking, suppose the stepson's wife has an argument with somebody else regarding her nichsim alug. Can the stepfather testify regarding his stepson's wife for or against her regarding these nichsim alug? So we're saying that no, he cannot, because he would be considered, in effect, like her father-in-law. And we established before that a father-in-law can't say Eidos. Rashi points out that we have to be talking about nichsim alug necessarily. If we were talking about nichsit tzoin barzel, which actually are considered to be the husbands, then there's no. Then the husband is eventually gonna have them completely once his wife passes away. Then there's no question he can't say Eidos. That's directly saying Eidos regarding his stepson. The Rosh points out that even as far as nichsim alug, the husband has a certain ownership of them as well. He has the peiros after all. So the Rosh says, fine, but you can have it when it comes to nichsim alug, as it talks about in Ksubas, the husband can write out something that says that says dinu dvorim ein li bin chasecha. I have no further business. I'm withdrawing myself completely from any dealings involving your nichsim alug. So then the chorger, then the son-in-law doesn't have anything directly to do with those nichsim alug. So then, fine, we would have said, if it weren't for Baal Ke Ishtoi and Isha Kabaila, we would have said that he could testify, that the stepfather could testify regarding them, but like this he can't, because Baal Ke Ishtoi and Isha Kabaila. Where do we see this? De Omer of Huna, Omer of Nachman, Nachman is in parenthesis over here, and the word Nachman is supposed to be out. Rav Huna and Rav Nachman are colleagues. Rav Huna is saying in the name of his Rebbe Rav. Anyway, Minayin Shal Isha Kabaila, how do we know indeed that a wife is considered like her husband? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, when it talks about the Arayas, Erva Sachio Vicholoi Sigalei, don't uncover the Erva of your father's brother, El Ishtoi Loi Sikrav, don't come close to his wife, Doidoschahi, because she's your aunt. Now, what do you mean she's your aunt? Valoi Eishas Doidehi. Doidoscha would suggest that you're direct aunt by blood, meaning your father or mother's sister. But she's not a blood relative of yours. She's married to a blood relative of yours. Miklal, the Isha Kabaila, nevertheless, the Pasuk calls her Doidoscha, showing that her husband and wife are considered like one unit. So there we learn this concept of Isha Kabaila and Baal Ke Ishtoi, and therefore, yeah, whenever you're possible to say Eidos regarding somebody, you're also possible to say Eidos regarding his wife. Next, Then we said in the Mishnah that your mother's husband, so your stepfather, is possible to say edus regarding you. And that includes him and his son and his son-in-law. So the question is, b'noi hainu achiv. The question is, why do we need to mention his son separately? Isn't your stepfather's son is your brother? Because you're talking about, so you have for example, so you have Reuven. Reuven was previously married to Dina, and they have a son together. And now later on, Dina passes away, or Reuven divorces her, and he marries, and then instead he marries Osnas, and they have more children together. That child, that son that they have, is your half brother. So he's already included. So why do we need to mention him separately? The answer is Amar Biyamila Nitzrucha Ella Achi Ha'ach. The chiddush of the Mishnah is even a brother of your brother. Your stepfather has a son from another. Your stepfather has a son from another wife as well. So you have a blended family over here. There are people over here who are not blood relations at all. They would even be able to marry one another la halacha. The Gemara mentions in a couple of places regarding Rav's family that it was that way. Both of Rav Chiya's parents had been previously married and had children. Rav Chiya is the one connecting the two families. Basically, he's a half brother to one side from the father and a half brother to the other side from the mother, and eventually a boy from one side married a girl from the other side, and their son is Rav, which makes Rav a double nephew of Rav Chiya. But the point is, we're saying over here, so you have a scenario like this, achi ha'ach, a brother of your brother. So nevertheless, there's no blood relation between you at all. Nevertheless, you're possible to say edus regarding one another. Okay, however, the Gemara says, Rav Chista ach sheba achi ach. Rav Chista held that such a thing is kosher. So they asked him, haven't you heard of what Rabbi Yirmiyah said, that the Mishnah is implying that he's possible? So he says, I didn't hear of it, which is to say, which means not that I didn't hear of it, but I didn't hold of it. You find, by the way, in Tanakh, the shorta shoma sometimes means to hear, like in other words, poshut for the sound waves to hit your eardrum. But sometimes instead, the word shoma means to understand or to accept. Shema Yisrael, for example, doesn't just mean listen with your ears; it means accept and then accept that Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So the same way, when he says lo shmi ali, means I don't accept this. Well, the Gemara asks, "Ihochi hainu ochiv?" Nu, then you're back to the question. Rabbi Yirmiyah had brought up this point of achia ach to explain the wording of the Mishnah. How is Rabbi Chista going to understand it? The answer is tona ochiv mina av v'katoni ochiv mina aim. Very simple. The Mishnah is mentioning both kinds of brothers. It's mentioning a brother from the father's side as well as a brother from the mother's side. So there's no repetitiousness in the Mishnah, but it's not including achia ach, where he's not a blood relative of yours at all. It has to be that you have one parent at least in common to be possible to say edus for one another. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Chista, Avi Chosen v'Avi Kala mi'idin ze'alze. The father of the Chosen and of the Kala, in other words, the Mechotonim, would be able to say edus regarding one another. Their comparison to one another is only like a cover for a barrel. In other words, you have a barrel and you have a cover on top of it. They're two different things. The same way, the two mechotanim over here are not considered closely related enough that they should be possible to say edus on one another.
Why do they use this parable?
I don't know. Because you think they're related by marriage. We have a name for them even in later Jewish literature. We call them mechotanim. You would think maybe they're considered close enough, but no. You're going to say the same way. Listen, you know, a barrel has a stopper over it. It's very important. You know, the contents of the barrel would spoil without the stopper. Nevertheless, they are two different things. The same way the two mechotanim are, after all, two different families.
They're saving inside their children.
I guess you could say that. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues, Omer Rav Abachana, made Odom l'ishtei arusa. A man would be able to say edus regarding his wife, regarding matters involving his wife, when she's in arusa. Because at that point, they're not considered related yet. Omer Ravina, lo yamorin ela puki mina. Now, Ravina says, though, that would only be if he's testifying regarding something that's going to take away money from her. So as long as he hasn't married her, then they're not considered that closely related. But not, avala, yuli law, loy mehaman. But to bring money in, the nap, then no, because then he's doing it. Then he's then he's negeya bedover. Eventually, it's gonna. Eventually, he's gonna marry her, and eventually, he's gonna marry her, and those nechosim are gonna be under his are gonna be under his control. But the Gemara says v'loy he. That's not so. We don't accept that distinction. Loy shnol apuki v'loy shnol ayuli loy meheman. Whether it's to take money away from her, whether it's to bring money into her. Either way, we don't believe him because. One way or the other, they are considered relatives. So, so yes, when she's an arusa, it is also for him to testify for regarding her already. And the Gemara continues. After all, my daitach. Why would Rabbi Baba Chana have said that you could? What made him think that he could? He was thinking to say that you can compare it to what Rabbi Ba'ami explains in the name of Ula. That when a man is. When a man has been Makadish a woman and they haven't yet done the Nisuin, he is not an Oinen or Matame for her, meaning if he's a Koyen, that now an Oinen is also to do the Avoida or to eat Kodshim on the day of the Misa. However, if his wife is only an Arusa, then those Dinim don't apply and he would be able to do the Avoida and he would be able to eat Kodshim. And on the other hand, a Koyen is able to be Matame for seven close relatives, one of them being his wife, but not over here because she's only an Arusa. So in other words, she's not considered a relative yet. V'chein he, and similarly, loy einenes v'lem etameloy, she's not an einenes for him, and she doesn't become tome for him. Now, not einenes, fine, we understand. The nafkamina of it is, when you have kodshim that can be eaten by women, kodshim kalim, then she would be mutter to eat it if her chosin passed away. What about loy metama? She anyway can become tome. A wife of a kohen is not also to become tome. So Rashi says lav davka. That listen, I mean, and to begin with, there's no reason to mention it. It's just to mention it for parallelism with the koyin. In other places, Rashi explains that you. And Rashi actually mentions that some manuscripts of the Gemara actually don't even have those words Einam Tama because it's completely unnecessary. She could become Tomei either way. But then he explains elsewhere. Rashi explains that listen, since we're saying that everybody has a mitzvah to be Matame for their relatives, but here that mitzvah doesn't apply to her. Another point also before she makes is you have Chayiv on Matar Atzmei Berego when it comes to the Sholosh Regalim, a person is supposed to be Tahor so they can come to the Bais Mikdash and eat korban. Okay, the mitzvah of Aliyah Regel doesn't apply to women in the first place, but nevertheless, she still should be able to be in a position to eat korbanos. We're saying at that time of year, then she shouldn't become tamei for her chosin because he's not her husband yet. Well, so therefore, so Rava Baba Chana is thinking, and the Braisa continues, or Rav Chiya Ba'ami continues, Mesa Eina Yosha, if she dies, then her chosin does not yarshin her, Mes Hu Goyva Ksubasa, but if he dies, then she collects her ksuba. Usually the ksuba takes effect only after the Nisuin, but here we're talking about, let's say, that the ksuba was made to take effect, while she's still a, kala, while she's still an arusa. The Gemara mentions in ksuba such examples. In any case, so therefore, so you would think to say by the same analogy, therefore, they're not considered relatives as far as the dinim of Eidos. But no, the difference is Hosam B'She'eret Tola Rachmana, because no, there the Torah makes it depend on whether she's his relative. When the Pasuk says that a man, that a Kohen can become Tomei for his wife, it uses the word She'eroi, which means his flesh. So until they've gotten married, then become Boser Echad, then she's not really his flesh, she's not really his close relative, and therefore he can't be Matame for her. Vakati, Lav She'era, he at this point, she's not She'era yet. But here the main point is that there's a Kiruv Adas, that they have a certain mental closeness to one another, and after all, he has a krivus das. He does have that. He was already ma'aris, he was already makadosh. So they have that closeness of das, and therefore that would be reason enough to passel him to testify regarding things involving her. We've said before, basically the whole concept of relatives testifying is basically exeris akosu. Nevertheless, though, the Popula Charifta on the Rosh points out that after all, we don't mean where the exeris akosu is. The exeris akosu is going to apply to any relatives where there is a krivus das. So in other words, we're going to use that reason to explain what is the parameters of the din of relatives being possible is going to be any time there's a krivus das, and yes, that's going to apply to a chosin and kala as well.
They're not a
shleni b'shlishi necessarily, but yeah. Okay. Next. The Mishnah had said Churger Levadai. Then the Mishnah had said a stepson and only the stepson, again, unlike all the other relatives in the Mishnah, where the Psulim apply also to them and their sons and their sons-in-law, with Churger, it applies only to him and not to his children. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Churger Levadai, Rabbi Yossi Omer Gisoi. Now in the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi says his brother-in-law, and Gisoi, and now you know, in English terminology, the word brother-in-law can mean a couple of different kinds of relatives. It can mean your wife's, it can mean your wife's brother, it can mean your sister's husband. It can even mean your wife's sister's husband would also be your brother-in-law. When we say gisa over here, we're referring specifically to the third kind. Your wife's sister's husband is called gisa. So what is Rabbi? So that's one braisa. So in other words, it sounds like Rabbi Yossi is saying that. It sounds like Rabbi Yossi is saying that only Gisai, only the husband of your stepson's sister would be possible to say Edris regarding him. We're going to work out now in the Gemara what Rabbi Yossi means exactly. V'tanya Edoch, then you have another Braisa, Gisai Levadai, only your brother-in-law, only your wife's sister's husband is possible. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Chorgoi. Rabbi Yehuda says your son, your stepson. So my comma, what do they mean? What do these Braises mean? Ilema Hochi comma, do you mean that Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the first braisa, Churger Levadai for Huadin Legisoi, that when Rabbi Yehuda says in the first braisa that your step, which is like the Mishnah, that your stepson alone, you're possible to say Edus regarding him, and you'd say Huadin Legisoi, you would say that the same kind of din applies to your sister, to your wife's sister's husband, that only he is possible, but for example, you'd be kosher to say Edus regarding his children. So what it means, so is that what Rabbi Yehuda means? In other words, so if you have your brother-in-law by marriage, so he's not a blood relation, so he's not a blood relation of you or of your wife. So he and his wife are not blood relations of yours. He's your wife's sister's husband, and you're saying Rabbi Yehuda would be saying you would be kosher to say Edus regarding his children, even though they're your nephews. They're not your nephews by blood at all. So that would be what Rabbi Yehuda means. But also Rabbi Yossi Lameimar, and Rabbi Yossi would be coming to say the other way around, Gisi Levadev Huadin Lachogai, that Rabbi Yossi wants you to know the same way he just starts in reverse. He says, your brother-in-law, you're possible to say Edris for, but his son you would be kosher to. So in other words, you would say there's no machloikas. Each one is mentioning a different relative and but they're saying the same dinim apply to both. Both of those are in the same category where only them, but not their children or their children-in-law. The problem with that is, again, we have the braisa that we learned on Amar Aleph. The Mishnah had mentioned eight basic relatives, which come out to 24, because for each one of them we said there's a son and a son. Him himself and his son and his son. So we had Shimon Ovis Chain Esther Rabba, eight, which come out to 24, because each one of them we had him and his son and his son-in-law. So 8 times 3, we said. So now, based on that Brisa, come on, who would this braisa be like? Loik Rabbi Yossi v'loik Rabbi Yehuda. It wouldn't be according to either Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Yehuda, because according to both of them, you'd say that either one of them, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, either one are saying that the Churgoi and the Gisoi are only them themselves. So therefore, see, in other words, the question is like this: of the eight of us that we're talking about, the Churgoi and the Gisoi are the Gisoi. The Mishnah had mentioned is one of the eight. The Mishnah had mentioned eight basic ones. Gisoi, his brother-in-law, is one of them. So now, according to the Bchia, it does include your brother-in-law's son and his son-in-law. But according to if we're going to say that both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda hold that your brother-in-law himself, you're possible to say Edus about, but your brother-in-law's son, you would be kosher. Then it comes out that you don't have. You're missing one of the eight. That eight doesn't have times three. So then you don't have 24, like Rabbi Chiya is saying. So Ella Hokikama. No, rather you have to understand the two braises as follows. Churgo Levado, the first braise that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that only churgo, only your brother-in-law is, I mean, only your stepson is possible, meaning not his sons. Avogisa, but when it comes to his brother, when it comes to your brother-in-law, then yes, it includes him and his son and his son-in-law. So yes, your brother-in-law, your wife's sister's brother, even though he's not a blood relation of yours at all, he's closely enough related that it includes even him. And his son and his stepson are all possible, but also Rabbi Yossi Lameimer, and Rabbi Yossi says, no, Gisei Levadoi, no, it means your brother-in-law alone is possible, but not his sons or his or not his sons or his sons-in-law. And all the more so your stepson, or all the more so his stepson, your brother-in-law's stepson, all the more so needless to say, your stepson would be possible, and that's it. It stops over there. So therefore, so therefore, we would say the Mishnah that said that your brother-in-law is possible together with his son and his son-in-law, that would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Braisa that Rabbi Chiya is saying that mentions only eight of us would be Rabbi Yossi, would be according to Rabbi Yossi, that Churga and Gisa are both them themselves. So therefore, so you have only eight. So you have only eight. Oh, sorry, I got it a little wrong. The question was that in the Mishnah we had nine relatives listed. So according to if we said that both Rabbi Chiya and if we said that both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi agree that Gisa is possible only him and not his sons and sons-in-law, then you have then you have more than the 24 Rabbi Chiya is mentioning. And the answer is that no, the Mishnah is going specifically according to Rabbi Yossi. The Mishnah rather is going specifically according to Rabbi Yehuda that only that when it comes to Gisai, yes, it does include his son and his son-in-law, and therefore he's one of the eight, and therefore so you do have the eight times three. Then the Mishnah mentioned Choge, which is an additional one, a 25th, where it's only him. Okay, the Gemara says Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, halacha Rabbi Yossi, the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Now, what do we mean by that? So the Gemara says, "Ahi matnasa." There was a shtar matana. Da havo chasim alei tre gisi. Two brothers-in-law were signed on it. Two like this, where we have the two of them were related, that their wives were sisters. Savra Rabbi Yosef la'achshura. So Rabbi Yosef thought to say it kosher. Do Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel halacha Rabbi Yosi. We said that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, and on the face of it, we mean Rabbi Yosi in our Mishnah, who said that according to Rabbi Yosi had said that only according to Rabbi Akiva do we have this long list of relatives in there that are possible. The Rabbi Yosi had said Mishnah Rishona is only Kol HaRoi LeYoshei, only anybody who is in line to inherit you. Your brother-in-law, your wife's sister's husband, would never be in line to inherit you. So Rabbi Yosef thought to say that it means this shtar would be kosher. Amalei Abaye, but Abaye says, "My dear Rabbi Yosef, the Masnisin, the Machshav Gisay." How do you know that it means Rabbi Yosef of the Mishnah, who says that that your brother-in-law would be kosher la'edus, because he says according to Mishnah Rishona it would be kosher and only according to Rabbi Akiva is possible. Duma Rabbi Yosef the Braisa, the possible Gofay. Maybe it's actually the possible Gisay. Maybe it refers to Rabbi Yosef in the Braisa that we just quoted, who says that your brother-in-law is possible to say Eidos on you. So here you have two brothers-in-law saying Eidos together. That would be the equivalent of two brothers or two cousins, where we learned at the beginning of the sugya that that's no good. The Braisa had said, no matter how we learn the Braisa, definitely Gisoy is possible. So even if we say the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, it may mean only insofar as that, what we just said, that Rabbi Yossi is saying that only Gisoy is that only Gisoy is possible, but not his son, and Churga is also, and your stepson is also possible, but only him. But still, two brothers-in-law together can't say Eidos together. And the Gemara says, no, Lois Salkadai, you can't think that way. Da'amah Shmuel, because Shmuel actually says, when he's explaining, what do I mean by Gisa? Could go down, no, Pinchas, da'aven an achi v'gisi. Take, for example, Shmuel says, I and my brother Pinchas were. We are brothers as well as brothers-in-law. The two of them together, the two of them had married two sisters. So now the implication is, so why are we possible to say Eidos? Because we're also brothers. The implication seems to be if we were only brothers-in-law, we would have been kosher. Only because we're also brothers, then that's what possibles us to say Eidos together. So therefore, so that would show that yes, that brothers-in-law are kosher to say Eidos together. And the answer is no. V'duma an kagona no Pinchas mishum degisse kamar. On the contrary, maybe Shmuel says you should know. For example, I and my brother Pinchas. I want to give you an explanation of what gisse means. You take, for example, we're married to two sisters. So Shmuel is not necessarily saying that we're posel la'edus only because we're also brothers. He may mean just the fact that we're brothers-in-law itself would be a reason to posel us together. But by the way, you should know we are also brothers. Well, so we have an argument between Rabbi Yosef and Abaya how to understand the din, and therefore whether Shara is going to be kosher. Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef says, to the makabel matana, to the one who's holding on to the shtar and wants to be able to hold on to the matana as a result of that, he tells him, zil kanya be'edim esira, go acquire it, meaning go acquire that matana with edim esira, that people will, you'll have edim that are watching when the noisin is giving you that shtar, kirab alazer, and then at least we can follow the balazer, edim esira karti, and therefore it doesn't matter that the edim who are signed on the shtar are relatives. Like Mar says, is that really going to work? Even Rabbi Lazar agrees that where it's forged from the where it itself is forged, meaning it's one thing when you have, for example, a shtar with no edim signed on it at all, then Rabbi Lazar is going to say edim is seder karti. But here, where you have edim that are signed on it that are actually posel, then it's considered, we look at the shtar itself and we see that there's a forgery, we see there's something wrong with it. Even Rav Elazar is not going to hold that Edi Masira saves such a situation. That's the point. In other words, right, he's saying Edi Masira, meaning if there's no Edi Chsima, then you can rely on Edi Masira. But if there's Edi Chsima and the Edi Apostle, that's even worse. Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells the guy, Zil, okay, go, they're not allowing me to give it to you, meaning in other words, yeah, Abaya has a valid point, and therefore it's true, your shtar is posel, and if you want this matona, you're going to have to go back to the original noisin, if he's still available, and get the matona from him some other way. Fine. So okay, we'll continue. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with these dinim of relatives, and then we can get into more dinim of Eidos, Be'ez Hashem. Thank you. Shukayach, everyone.
Shukayach. Shukayach. Do you hear me?